Chapter 34. Miracles. Battle Barge Charybdis, Strategium. Zetos met the gaze of Colo Odyssean with hard resolve. In his mind, there was no other choice. "She has to try again, shipmaster. It'll kill her." Odyssean looked haggard, his youthful verve drained by seeing Circe after the aborted warp translation. Zetos had heard from Arik Gulero that Odyssean practically had to break open the door to the sanctum so he could stop Circe's screaming.
"Hecht believes there is a way."
Odyssean frowned and glanced at the shadowed figure of the grey legionary standing in the corner of his strategium. The low-lit room abutted the bridge and was filled with star charts and cartographs, those the shipmaster had used to plot the Charybdis's staggered route through the ruin storm. To have any hope of getting through it, each warp translation needed to be small and meticulously plotted across known routes. They'd barely begun the journey, and already there was talk of abandonment.
"With the greatest respect, what way is there that won't kill my navigator and likely your librarian into the bargain?"
Ushaman had suffered too. Not as badly as Circe, but he looked drawn, standing in the background. Zetos hadn't seen it during the conclave, but now he did, the slow fraying of resolve. Hecht stepped into the light of a single overhead lumen.
"You must want to enter the storm," he said simply.
"That's it?" Odyssean looked unimpressed. "That's your insight?"
"You forget yourself, shipmaster," warned Zetos.
Odyssean held up his hand.
"Apologies, my nerves are a little on edge. You have to understand, when I dragged Circe from her novatum, she was raving." He licked his lips. "To put her back so soon, I fear for her."
"Don't let her see that," said Hecht. "In the warp, will is everything. Every weakness you have, every frailty will be exposed and exploited by what lurks in the sea of souls."
Odyssean shook his head. "I have travelled the warp. I've even seen men driven mad because of it. But what happened to Circe was something else. Endless night," she said. "That there was no light. What does that even mean?"
"That a veil has been drawn across the galaxy, cutting out all light, all voices save those trapped within the storm. Those voices are souls, and they scream in torment."
Odyssean gave a humorless laugh. "And you wish for me to fly into that?"
"It isn't our desire, shipmaster," said Zetos. "They are your orders, and you will follow them."
Odyssean held his tongue for a moment, wisely considering his words. When he spoke again, it was to Hecht.
"Tell me then, how is it to be done?"
"Imagine the veil as a thin ream of black cloth," said Hecht. "From a distance, anything that touches it, any light, be that the Astronomicon or the psychic impression cast out by an astropath, is absorbed, nullified. But a narrow sliver of light can penetrate what a shaft cannot, eking through the minute imperfections in the cloth, shining on what lies ahead, and, eventually, beyond the veil. If we can see the way ahead, we can see our path. Travel far enough, and our destination will become visible also."
"In a dark night, the mariners of old would use lanterns to light their way," said Odyssean. "But what light do we have that will breach this tempest?"
"On Sotha, there was a beacon that illuminated Macragg," said Zetos. "It was how we reached Ultramar, through the storm." "A safe haven," said Hecht. "A fixed port."
"We have neither," said Odyssean.
"Your mariner, if he came across a reef, what would he do?" asked Hecht.
"Trim the sails to slow down the ship and use his lantern to find the rocks."
"Except in the ruin storm, the rocks are the discordant cries of damned souls and the fell creatures spawned by them. It is raw emotion made manifest."
Zetos exchanged a glance with Ushaman, but the librarian was listening intently and had no further insight. He did, however, ask the question that was on Zetos's mind.
How can you know this? Such knowledge is dangerous.
Hecht met Ushaman's questioning gaze.
All knowledge, if improperly applied, is dangerous, he said, as if that were sufficient answer. Whatever emotional turmoil you bring with you when you enter the storm, fear, hate, jealousy, it is echoed 1,000-fold, 10,000-fold, once inside.
Though he tried not to, Odysseus could not help but summon the memory of Maelissa. How he thought he had buried it, but when he saw the refugee girl...
You must master your emotions, or they will consume you. They will consume us all, Hecht said. Have you ever seen or fought a demon? I don't mean one that has burrowed into a living host and slowly hollowed it. I mean an actual neverborn.
Zetos remembered the creature he had fought alongside his brothers and the Ultramarines on Macrag. He remembered how the monster within Zenutsul's body had yearned for release, how it had stretched his skin and mutated him.
Unburdened,
he spoke the word without realizing he had said it at first. All eyes turned, Hecht's narrowed.
Possessed flesh is a pale shadow of what we may face in the ruin storm. Your rage, your fear and hate, every envious thought, every scheme, each and every part of you will return embodied, twisted, and seek to devour its creator. Only hope will guide us through the storm, said Hecht, echoing Ushaman's words from earlier, and a willingness to embrace our fate.
You cannot expect the mortal crew not to have fear, said Zetos.
Then keep them close, or keep them shackled. Weakness will undo us, but do not think any of us are immune. Can you tell me you have never acted in dishonor, out of wrath, or a desire for unjust vengeance?
Zetos still bore the bruises of his fight with Numeon. He had wanted to kill him, at least some small part of him had, and his wounded pride at standing down as leader of the pyre.
Vulcan taught us temperance and gave us the Promethean creed, said Zetos. It will gird us in the dark days ahead.
Hecht spread his hands.
Then there is nothing else I can teach you.
Ushaman bowed his head to leave.
I will ensure the navigator and I are well prepared.
Odysseus watched him go, but still looked unconvinced. Hope? He asked. What hope is there?
Numeon, said Zetos, as if that explained everything. Numeon has given us hope. Try again, shipmaster, he said. Circe must enter the storm and hold to her course.
And if she dies because of it?
Zetos's face darkened, but showed resolve.
Then we are truly without hope.
The legionaries departed the Strategium, leaving Odysseus to his thoughts. He stared at the charts for a few minutes, trying to imagine a scenario that did not end in failure and death. Then he activated a private Vox channel to the Novatum.
They want me to go back, don't they?
Said Circe, without the need for Odysseus to ask. Yes.
Have you seen her again?
No, not yet. I have been on the bridge.
Keep her away, Kolo. Please.
I will, I promise. He struggled to keep his voice level, the agony of the memory as fresh as it had ever been, like a raw wound exposed to air.
She can't be in here with me when I go back.
I know, Circe. You don't have to do this.
Yes, I do.
She cut the link. In the half-light of the Strategium, Odysseus hung his head. Gargo had taken them to the forges. They sat around a workbench in one of the weapons rooms where some of the Black Smiter's labors rested in tall racks. The air was redolent of ash and smoke, and the dingy light cast deep shadows. Flickering firelight painted one wall, filtered through a small window through which they could see the forges.
"So, brother," Numeon began, "what is your expert opinion?"
Gargo stopped rubbing his salt-stubble chin to first regard, then examine the sigil.
"It's a hammer," he replied. "A fuller, to be precise."
Holding it one-handed, he gauged the heft. He even slapped the flat head into his open palm.
"Robust. I think I could forge with this. Nothing else?"
Gargo shook his head.
"It's just a hammer. And a symbol. A sign of the Lord of Drakes himself," said Numeon, prompting Gargo to nod.
He took the sigil as it was offered, then gave it to Zon. The Techmarine laid it back down gently. Mechadendrites snapped from haptic inload points in his gauntlets and began to examine the minutiae of the hammer.
"No unusual metals," he said. "Its construction is common, which in itself could be considered unusual, given this was once part of our Primarch's armor."
"Then how do you explain what I did with it?"
Zon's cold gaze fell upon the captain.
"I cannot. Logically, it makes no sense. It has no power field, no obvious source of energy beyond that of the wielder. And yet you took that cataphracti warplate apart with it like you were holding a thunder hammer."
"It was more than that."
Zon nodded, setting off his neck gyros again.
"Yes, I believe it was."
Numeon covered his mouth and looked down, pensive. He exhaled a long breath before looking back up.
"When I was rescued by Thiel's Red Marked, he said they had tracked a beacon, something in the hammer. Can you find evidence of something like that?"
Zon picked up the fuller and gave it back.
"There is nothing beyond what we three all see."
"And yet the evidence of our eyes does not amount to the truth, does it?"
"The truth is miraculous, brother captain,"
said Gargo, the light of belief in his eyes. Numeon felt uncomfortable at once. He believed in Vulcan, in the Primarch's return, and the role of Nocturne in his resurrection. Gargo looked at him like some messianic figure, a flesh-and-blood symbol that would lead them out of the storm and back to the fire. He rose to his feet, securing the sigil to his belt.
"There's nothing more to learn here. Do what you can to bolster the ship. If we do leave the warp unexpectedly again, I don't want the Charybdis to have torn itself apart."
Zon nodded. Gargo bowed reverently.
"Vulcan lives, Captain."
Numeon was about to answer, but couldn't find the appropriate words, so he just nodded back silently instead. He made for the Sanctum, having not been there since the attack on the Charybdis, and found Varkir already present. He had lit a brazier flame and was staring at it intently.
"How long has it been?"
Numeon asked quietly. It took a few seconds for the chaplain to answer.
"Since I looked into the flame," he replied, turning to face the captain, "or since I came down here in vigil?"
"Either, both.
What do you see?"
Numeon asked as he knelt down beside him.
"The same as before. Fire, and beyond that, nothing but embers."
"Why did you come back, Varkir?"
"Because I hoped something would have changed."
"It has. We have, all of us. Hope has returned."
"No, brother. It is blind faith."
Numeon frowned.
"Is there any other kind?"
Varkir got to his feet.
"Gargo looks to you and sees the Primarch reborn. I cannot imagine how uncomfortable that must make you, Artelos."
Numeon dipped his head a little, confirming Varkir's suspicions.
I have heard talk of miracles, and perhaps there is some strand of fate we have grasped, and now follow all the way to Nocturne. But I can see nothing in the flames. I didn't come here in the hope of the miraculous, Artellus. I came here to mourn. Vulcan is gone.
Numeon scowled. How, of all of us, is it that you still doubt, Valkyr? You are our chaplain by Vulcan's blood.
That is precisely why I must be skeptical. For the preservation of our spirit and our purpose, to be steadfast and grounded when others are attracted to loftier notions. If I do not, who will? We are in danger of forgetting who we are.
Then why fight so vehemently? Why are you so bent on us going back?
Because Vulcan belongs with Nocturne. He belongs in the mountain, returned to the earth. I want our father to be at peace, brother. That is all.
I want to be at peace, Valkyr. I haven't felt like that since before Istvan V.
Valkyr laid his hand upon Numeon's forehead, and the captain closed his eyes at the touch of the chaplain's black gauntleted fingers.
Make amends with Zetos. Regardless of our differences in this, you and I are of one mind when it comes to getting the Charybdis through the storm and back to Nocturne. My every effort is pledged to this deed, but don't ask me to believe in Vulcan's resurrection. I cannot.
Valkyr let his hand fall away. By the time Numeon had opened his eyes again, the chaplain had gone.